Okay, Matthew chapter 16, if you will. Matthew chapter 16, we'll begin in verse 21, kind of breaking some new ground here this week. It says, "From that time forth began Jesus to show unto his disciples how that he must go unto Jerusalem and suffer many things of the elders and the chief priests and the scribes, and be killed and be raised again the third day. Then Peter took him and began to rebuke him, saying, Be it far from thee, Lord, that this shall not be unto thee. But he turned and he said unto Peter, Get thee behind me, Satan. Thou art an offense unto me, for thou savorest not the things that be of God, but those things that be of men. Then said Jesus unto his disciples, If a man will come after me, let him deny himself, and take up his cross and follow me. For whosoever will save his life shall lose it, and whosoever will lose his life for my sake shall find it." The first few words in this text there in verse 21 say, "from that time forth." And that just seems to be a phrase of transition here that's indicating that Jesus is making a shift here. Not a total shift, but he's shifting his focus, the focus of his ministry, which is slowly coming towards a climax, okay? He's shifting it mostly from the public work that he's been doing, which has been a great deal, which has been taking up most of his time, to now more private instruction for his disciples. Again, not exclusively, but the focus becomes more, the balance is shifted from public to private, okay? He's beginning to show his disciples some of the more difficult truths relating to God's plan for him. Now, all along, he has been alluding to and being straightforward in many ways about his purpose and about the things that were going to come to pass. But as he moves forward from here, he becomes more urgent, if you will, with his instruction to the disciples, more pointed about his impending death and the things that would follow. And so I want you to notice the word that he uses here in the very first verse there. It says, "From that time forth began Jesus to show unto his disciples how that he must." And then it proceeds to say what he must do, okay? That speaks of the necessity of it. That speaks of that it's imperative. He has to do these things. These things are the things that are going to have to be done in order for him to accomplish what the Father has for him, which is to atone for the sins of mankind. It's the only way. There's no other way. He must do these things. And in this verse, verse 21 there, and that's verse 21 is about as far as we're going to get today because there's a lot there. But in this verse, he kind of lays it out in stages of what's going to take place. In the first stage, he says there that he must go unto Jerusalem. And you might think that there's not a great amount of significance to that, but there is, because Jerusalem was the city of sacrifices in terms of the true and living God. Obviously, pagans sacrificed all over. But in terms of God and his business and his economy, Jerusalem had become the city of sacrifice. It was the place where the Passover lamb was to be sacrificed. For centuries, it had been the center now of Jewish worship. The Jews They could worship anywhere that they wanted to, but this was the center of where the feast took place and the sacrificial work in the temple took place, and all of this was happening in Jerusalem and had for some time. Could Jesus have died on the cross anywhere else? Of course he could. God can do anything he wants, but Jerusalem was the appropriate place. Okay, lambs. Had been sacrificed there for hundreds of years, and now it was time for the Lamb of God to lay down his life and to be sacrificed there. And so it's the right place. Now, remember at the time of this, or when Jesus is speaking here, they're in Caesarea Philippi. Now you can go back all the way back up to 13, verse 13, and see that, okay? I'll remind you, if you look at your maps, you'll see that that is in the very northern part of the region of Palestine, okay? And so Caesarea Philippi, far north of Jerusalem, is about as far away from the city of David or Jerusalem that you could be and still be in the land of Palestine. So he says, I must go to Jerusalem. He's saying in the days ahead, and we're going to follow it as we go, he and his disciples are going to begin to move south, okay? They're going to make their way through Galilee, then they'll make their way through Samaria, all the way into the region or the province of Judea, which is where Jerusalem is. And so they're going to be gravitating towards Jerusalem, not going to just make a beeline. There'll be a lot of things that happen on that journey. But keep in mind, at this time as we speak, the religious Jews have already got it out for Jesus. They've already made up their mind. They want him out of the way. He's exposed their hypocrisy. He has shed light on their man-made traditions and their faulty way of worshiping God. And he's already done this. And if you'll remember back just the last chapter, in chapter 15, we saw where while he was in Galilee, they had sent a delegation of scribes and Pharisees all the way from Jerusalem to Galilee to expose him and oppose him, if you will. They couldn't expose him. They would have liked to have done so. But to oppose him and call his practices, call his ministry into question, of course, it didn't take long for him to set them very straight when they got there. And Matthew chapter 15 and verse 3 says this, "But he answered and said unto them, Why do ye also transgress the commandments of God by your traditions?" That was just the beginning of him setting them straight. Then he proceeded from there, and we're not going to rehearse this because we've already studied it, but he proceeded from there to begin to detail to them all the errors of their tradition. And again, we've studied that, but he begins to point out all the faulty ideas that they had about serving God. And so when it comes time now for his atoning work to be done and for his blood to be shed upon the cross, they're not going to have to track him down. They're not going to have to look for him like he's a fugitive or search for him in any way at all, because he's going to go to them on his own. He says, I must go to Jerusalem. Okay, they're not going to have to be looking for him at all. He says in John chapter 10 and verse 17, he says, "I lay down my life that I might take it again. No man take it from me, but I lay it down of myself. And I have the power to lay it down, and I have the power to take it again." So Jesus is not on the run. And he's not hiding from those that are going to take his life. He knows they're going to take his life. He knows what has to be done. And so he's going to leave, again, miles and miles and miles north of Jerusalem, and he's going to begin to go south, and he's going to make his way down there, and he's going to be at Jerusalem at the right time, right in line with his Father's will, not a day sooner, not a day later. It's pretty funny that they think they're going to go get him. He's going to come to them. Now, let's digress for just a moment from this text and just talk about Jerusalem for a minute, because I think it's important that we understand the significance of that. Right now, it's the center, you know, it's been called the center of the world. And right now, you rarely turn on the national news without seeing something about Jerusalem, okay? It's always been that way, okay, since the days of Christ. Jerusalem... the name Jerusalem literally means foundation of peace. Yet, throughout its history, there's been very few times of peace in Jerusalem. It's always been tumultuous in Jerusalem. Now, during the reign of King Israel, King David, during his reign, is when Jerusalem really came into to focus. It, of course, obviously had been there, but it wasn't called Jerusalem. And King David captured the city from the Jebusites, okay? And he named it after himself. That's why many times you hear it referred to as the city of David, okay? That's Jerusalem. Then his son, we know that after David, as he was dying, he commissioned his son with God's permission, to go and build the temple there in Jerusalem. And so King Solomon did just that. And it was from there forward, from that time forward, that it became the central place of Jewish worship, okay? It was the center of all things Jewish, okay? And it's often referred to not just as the city of David, but it's also referred to as the city of God as well, because over the centuries, it was where the sacrifices took place. It's where everybody, what's the term? Not commuted, but they went to, okay? Simple, put it that way. When the feasts would come up, and when the various major things of Jewish religion came up, people traveled for many, many miles to get to Jerusalem, okay? And so it's been a city that's been the focus of not just the Jews, but the focus of the world for quite some time. Over the centuries, Jerusalem was lost and then recaptured and then lost and then recaptured many times, but it never lost its identity as the city of God after David had captured it and made it the capital city. It's always been the city of God's people, even when it was in ruins. Even when the walls were on the ground, it was still considered the center of worship. It was still, when the Israelites were in captivity, perhaps hundreds of miles away, they always looked and prayed towards Jerusalem. They always had a desire to go back to Jerusalem. And, of course, in many of your Old Testament books, you see where some of them got to make that pilgrimage, okay? But it was... it never lost, after it became the city of God, it never lost its I'm really, my mind's going 90 different directions here. It never lost its place as the city of God. Okay, let me get focused here. Okay, now by the time Jesus arrived on the earth, it was still the place of genuine worship. I mean, it was still considered the place of worship, but it had become so distorted. The Jews, and we've talked about this many times, with their traditions and their ideas, it had become really, it was lacking any kind of spiritual depth there at the temple. And that's why Jesus, when he went into the temple, he took a whip and he cleansed the temple, and he ran out the money changers and the merchants and all the people who were exploiting the temple for personal gain and for profit. He ran them off, because that's what it had come to, and it had just declined. And so that what was taking place while Jesus was walking the earth. Now you fast forward several years to AD 70, and the Roman army went in and destroyed Jerusalem. And that was the first time for a long time that the Jews lost total, almost total connection to the city of Jerusalem. In fact, it would not be taken back into Jewish control for 1900 years, and most of us with any age on us know and that have studied that in the 20th century, in 1948, it was finally the state of Israel came back into being. Okay, 1900 years, you think about that, when it had been out of the hands, it had been out of Jewish control. And still, how anybody can read about that historical event, of course that was before I was born, but I've read a lot about it, how you can read about that historic event and say there's no God, because it's the most incredible thing when you study about that and find out 1900 years. And in 1948, the modern state of Israel came to be and has continued. And even for the last 75 years since then, it's had no peace. You see, it's still looking for the days of peace. It was it hasn't lived up to his name, its name, the foundation of peace. And so it's only going to happen down the road You read about it in Zechariah chapter 14, where it talks about it becoming the place where his people dwell, and there will no longer be any curse, and they will dwell in safety. It's after Jesus comes back, and when he returns and sets up his kingdom, that Jerusalem is finally going to live up to its name and be a city of peace. And by the way, the scripture tells us that we should be praying for the peace of Jerusalem. It's not going to have literal peace between, you know, on that homeland until Jesus establishes it, okay? But we should still pray for it. It's been so much turbulent water under the bridge between the time that Jesus goes to Jerusalem and is crucified, which our text is talking, anticipating, and the time of his earthly kingdom. There's going to be a lot of turbulent water go under the bridge. But it's going to finally come to a point that there will be peace in Jerusalem. So let's get back to our text for just a moment. The first stage here that Jesus is telling him, he says that he must go to Jerusalem. And he says, and suffer many things. That's the next stage. Suffer many things. By the time Jesus was arrested in the Garden of Gethsemane to the time that he took his last breath on the cross, to say that he suffered would be an understatement. From the ridicule, to the beatings, to the plucking of his beard, to the piercing of his hands and feet, and many other things in between. He endured beyond suffering. It was absolute torture. And so he's anticipating that. He's telling his disciples, I must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things. They had no idea the magnitude of what that meant. But he likely did, okay, as the Son of God. Then we get to the third stage, he says, and be killed. He says, I must go to Jerusalem, suffer many things of the elders and the chief priests and the scribes, and be killed. And the word for being killed here, the Greek word that's translated to be killed, it's not a word that carries the ideal of a legal execution, okay? But rather, it's a word that is used for unlawful murder. And that's exactly what took place. Our Lord never really got a legal trial. He was never legally tried and found guilty because, of course, he had no guilt. And they knew he had no guilt. And so he went before an unlawful court and was unlawfully found guilty and unlawfully sentenced to death, okay? Sentenced to death on false charges that were really just something made up by the vindictive Jewish leaders of the day. And they were determined to silence him at any cost, and this was the way to do that. So though it was a corrupt process and it was unlawful, still it was a part of God's plan. God allows the evil to accomplish his will and his plan, and so his redeeming plan for mankind was not thwarted in any way by the corruption of this unlawful court. And then we get to the fourth and final stage, which of course is what follows his being killed, and it says, and be raised again the third day. Now, it's this declaration that is making the acceptance of the previous announcements he just gave. I'm going to Jerusalem, I'm going to suffer, I'm going to be killed. That's pretty hard to swallow, okay? It's this final announcement that kind of makes that a little more palatable or a little more tolerable. The previous things speak of defeat. You know, I'm going to suffer, I'm going to die. You get in your mind, there's a defeat here. It's going to be over from a human standpoint, okay? But the truth of the matter is, he goes on, he says, and be raised on the third day. There's going to be victory. There's going to be triumph. There's going to be glory. Now, as specific, and we're done, just a second here. As specific and detailed as Jesus is being now, remember, he's alluded to his future destiny, if you will, along the way. And he's kind of softened his disciples up and given them an ideal of what lies ahead, okay? And now he's being very pointed with these terms that he used. I mean, it's hard to misinterpret what he's just said here. But in spite of the details and the straightforwardness and the being as specific as he's being in this particular verse, still his disciples are not fully grasping the truth of this, okay? And we see by the following verses, which we've already read and we'll study the next time we're together, but they're still not getting it, especially Peter. And so we'll look at that the next time we're together, okay? Appreciate you guys very much. Let's go ahead and stand, and we'll be dismissed, and I hope you have a good remainder of the week. Pray for rain, and those of you who have signed up for the youth fundraiser there at Slayton Bakery, thank you, and appreciate your help with that. And we will go ahead and dismiss in a word of prayer. Jim St. Pierre, will you lead us in prayer, please?